Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, John McCure and Julia Fellow.
It feels like it's been a month since I've seen you.
John!
It has been. I was gone for several weeks with listeners on a trip. You were off the past couple of days.
I was depressed while John was gone.
And I didn't like the last 2 days either very much. But I'm glad that we are back together. Adam Roberts
sitting
is sitting here in the studio. I mean, Adam, you're fine. You did a really nice job,
actually.
Yeah,
I thought we had a great show.
We did, but I'm glad that you're back, Julie. I'm glad that I'm back. All right, let's get to some of the things that we have our eye on this afternoon.
This is the three. At 3 on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
All right, speaking of Adam Roberts, he's just literally walked back into the building a couple of minutes ago from a kind of hairy-looking wreck site out on the interstate system. Adam?
That's right, guys. So we've been following this for the last few hours, going back to midday news, with this tanker truck that is now still on its side. This is 4194 South, just past College, and the backups for this are gnarly. They were bad when I was there, and they've only gotten worse.
You can see it, by the way, Adam. Don't mean to interrupt you by texting the word watch. 855-616-1620. Incredible picture. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
So what I can say, I was speaking with a paramedic who was blocking the on-ramp to the freeway, and what I was told was the driver of the semi was able to walk away from the crash.
Wow.
And was conferring with the hazmat team, which is still on scene. They've got their trailer out there right now, because there's a lot of stuff, and this was a full tanker, apparently. And so there's a big patch of grass off on the side of the freeway that they have to test and see if anything got onto the freeway. Typically, with these cases, if there was anything more serious than injury, they would close the freeway down, and you can still get through in that far left lane. I know Debbie's keeping a close eye on it, but the backup's still very intense with this one, this crash that's been ongoing now for several hours.
That is gnarly looking. Okay, by the way, Adam will join us coming up in the 5 o'clock hour with a new idea to crack down on people who don't pay their parking tickets in Milwaukee. This is something that applies to a lot of people. We've got that for you coming up at 5:08 this afternoon. And the second thing, Julia, we've been talking about this throughout the course of the day. Fiserv, the big financial services company based here in Milwaukee, boy, it's not a good day for them, and that's putting it really mildly. Last year, their stock climbed to 238. It closed yesterday at 126, and now today the market's just closed, and it's at 70. 70. That's a almost 45% drop on the day. Their name is on our arena.
I know.
Are they in trouble? Brian Jacobson, Annex Wealth Management, chief economist with some perspective. He will join us coming up at 3:45. But they're right here downtown now. They just moved. And this is a shocking day if you work there or you have Fiserv stock.
Yeah, there's almost 1,000 employees that work here in Wisconsin alone.
Yeah, wow. Rough day.
Okay, number three. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. We know that he was a U.S. congressman, and Tom Tiffany took over.
Yep.
Now Tom Tiffany is running for governor. Well, Sean Duffy's son-in-law wants that seat. Isn't that interesting?
Is he in?
So the son-in-law, according to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, it says that he is considering.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
So his name is Michael Alfonso. So he's married to Duffy's daughter, Evita. And it's pretty interesting because he has such a great story. He's the grandson of Cuban refugees. So he has such a great storied. He says he'll fight for jobs, lower costs, and protect the American dream as his grandparents fled to Cuba to find. So it's very interesting.
That is interesting. Duffy, of course, in the news as well. Leaders in Milwaukee, some of them want him to step in and take some steps that would lead to maybe the hop disappearing. So we're on top of the Duffy story.
Yeah, like the government funding?
Yeah, yeah. With the grant obligations, it's really interesting. It is 3:13 at WTMJ. The Marquette Law School poll is out today. What are the top issues that voters are concerned about? What do they think of the job that President Trump and Governor Evers are doing? And who do they think is responsible for the federal government shutdown? Charles Franklin, the poll author, is with us live up next on WTMJ.
Wisconsin's Afternoon News podcast is sponsored by Dave Drakamp Heating. Your comfort is their family's tradition. Visit DaveDrakamp.com.
All right, the Marquette Law School poll is out. They covered a lot of ground, a lot of fascinating topics, and as usual, they are very thorough. The poll author, Charles Franklin, is with us on the hotline. Charles, good afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, good afternoon. Great to be here.
Hey, Charles, I wanted to start with something that's going on right now, and that is the government shutdown. Everybody's kind of wondering what's going to happen. It's in its fourth week, and you guys did some polling asking people who's to blame for the government shutdown. What did you find?
Well, we found that by a small margin, people think Republicans are more to blame than Democrats, but about a third say that both sides are to blame. And the not surprising at all finding is that people absolutely blame the other party and don't think their side had anything to do with it. And that's Republicans blaming Democrats, Democrats blaming Republicans. But independents, who have a little bit of a distance here, say that both parties are responsible by 63%.
You know, what's also really interesting is who to blame with the tariffs. And it's nearly split.
Yep. The thing on so much, but not everything, but on an awful lot of these, is that the partisans know their sides and are strongly united behind them. So will tariffs help or hurt the economy? 64% of Republicans say it'll help the economy. 95% of Democrats say hurt the economy. And a sizable majority, 55 to 25 of independents, say it'll hurt the economy. So you see this strong partisan difference. Republicans not quite as positive about tariffs as Democrats are negative. But you also see it on whether tariffs are helping or hurting Wisconsin farmers, to bring it a little closer to home. 62% say hurting farmers, 16% helping. And on that one, Republicans are evenly split, 31 help, 32 hurt, and 36 deny that the tariffs have anything to do with the farmers. Democrats, 95 to nothing, literally 95 to zero, say tariffs are hurting farmers.
Wow. But the one thing that people were kind of agreeing with and their top concern, inflation, cost of living. But the other thing that I found was really interesting, that Republicans are most concerned, the second thing, is immigration, and Democrats, they're more concerned about health insurance.
Yeah, with inflation, you see both sides pretty concerned. Democrats and independents quite concerned, but Republicans pretty concerned about inflation, less so than the other two groups. But when you get to issues that divide the parties, immigration, where Republicans are very pro-Trump on immigration, Democrats are very anti-Trump, or on health care, where Democrats are very pro the Affordable Care Act, Republicans much more negative about it. That's where you see these big partisan differences on issues that the parties have staked out positions and held them for a long time on.
Marquette Law School poll director Charles Franklin is with us. Charles, I want to ask you about the governor's race. We all know there's a lot of time until that race takes place and the candidates will define themselves, et cetera. But I was stunned that almost everyone in both party is a net negative when it comes to the favorability of gubernatorial candidates. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So this is the percent favorable minus the percent unfavorable. So if they're more unfavorable, you're a net negative, or the other way around, a net positive. So we've seen almost all candidates or political figures over the last several years having net negative views. There are very few and far between where the net is positive. That didn't used to be the case. As recently as 2012, it absolutely wasn't the case. But these days, most people are net negative. In the governor's race and in both primaries, most people are net negative, and they're all in low single digits net negative. So -2, -5, maybe -6. But that's because they're so little known that most people don't have an opinion about any of these candidates. And so the result is you get that kind of negativity that we've been seeing for a long time. But it's negativity of sort of a small ball margins, right? Just single digits, more unfavorable than favorable. But really, as you say, we've got a year until the governor's election. That's a long time for people to get to know them and start to form more meaningful opinions about them rather than just top of the head things, with the exception of some folks that are really paying close attention.
I know you pay very close attention to all of the races. How crucial do you think it is for either side to win the governor's seat coming up in 2026?
Oh, I think it's quite important. You know, we've gone through, or will by then have gone through, 8 years of Democratic control, which followed 8 years of Republican control, which followed 8 years of Democratic control. So it seems like we've been alternating with people being elected and then reelected, but then switched the parties. So it's a real question about whether next year's election will stay true to form and flip back to a Republican governor, or whether the Democrats can hold the office for a third term, which hasn't happened since Tommy Thompson did it in the 1990s.
Charles, so we had Bill Berrien, gubernatorial candidate, with us in the studio, who tried to tell us that a lot of Wisconsinites believe that you should be able to have a concealed carry license without going to training. That's what he told us. You polled, and it looks like Republicans and Democrats, by and large, don't agree with that stance. What did you find about whether or not there should be mandatory training to carry a license?
Yeah, this is really lopsided and has been over several years when we've asked the question. Just 20% say we should have unlicensed or so-called constitutional carry, where you don't need any training or a license to carry a concealed handgun. 78% are opposed to that, and it's sizable majorities of Republicans, independents, and Democrats. It's really across-the-board opposition. In contrast, the law we have now, which allows concealed carry with a license, 77% support that current law for concealed carry, just 22% opposed. And again, each party has a majority in favor of that licensed concealed carry, including just over 50% of Democrats. That was a much more controversial issue back in 2012 when it was actively being debated. But we've got a really sizable three quarters that support that concealed carry with a license, but a little over three quarters who oppose it without a license.
Marquette University Law School poll director Charles Franklin. Charles, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Are you familiar with that?
That is so iconic.
I know. Les Miserables.
Incredible.
Oh.
I love it. I'm getting goosebumps.
I know. I'm auditioning. I don't know if your microphone's working. Is her microphone working?
Let's see. Now it's on.
Now it is. There we go. The world's most popular musical, running 8 more shows at the Marcus Performing Arts Center, including tonight through Sunday. And we have with us, joining us, is Alexa Lopez, who brings Cosette to life in this powerful production of Les Miserables. It's set in the 19th century.
Incredible.
During a really difficult time in France.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So if you text WATCH to 855-616-1620, WATCH to our Sighting Unlimited talk and text line, you can see video of it. The set is unbelievable. And you have such an amazing story arc.
Mm.
And can you talk about just your character and what it took to get your role?
Yeah. So Cosette is the daughter of Fantine, who I don't want to give too much away. I want you guys to come see the show. But I guess Les Mis has been around for 40 years now, so I guess the plot is out. But yeah, Fantine, she passes away pretty early on in the show, and our main protagonist, Jean Valjean, adopts Cosette as a child and raises her as his own. When I come in as adult Cosette, we get to see a beautiful love story arc and how her relationship has developed with her father. Getting this role, it took a couple auditions, a lot of hard work. I auditioned in New York City, and I had a couple rounds, and the last round was a final callback with my Marius, Peter Neuruther, and my Eponine, Jaden Ladder. So we got to do that together in New York City. And a couple weeks later, we all found out that we booked it. And luckily, I know both of them. I went to school with Jaden, and I did a show with Peter this last spring. So coming into this process, it was lovely to have friends and familiar faces.
You glow when you talk about your work, and it's really cool to see.
Thank
this
you.
Is such an iconic role.
Yeah.
You get to do a lot of cool things, but to play Cosette, what's it mean to take this role that the world knows and bring it to life?
Oh, it makes me emotional. I think back to when I was a young girl watching, you know, my first musical on stage. I think it was either West Side Story or Phantom of the Opera, and how inspired I was. And especially West Side Story, seeing like a BIPOC lead, like a Latina lead, it made me feel like, oh my gosh, there are roles for me out here. This is an inclusive industry. So getting to bring Cosette to life and getting to bring her life as a Latina is so important to me. You know, I think about little girls in the audience watching me, and hopefully I can inspire them the same way I was inspired.
Yeah, it feels fresh when I'm watching it, meaningful with today's audiences. Mm-hmm. But when it's set amid such a tough time in the 19th century, like the story of hope, sacrifice, do you see how that message still lives on today?
Yeah, it's timeless. And I think that's why Les Mis is so successful, and it will be successful. It was successful before I was born. I'm telling my age. It'll be successful when I'm, you know, in my 60s probably, and after that. It's just it never gets old. The music is iconic. It's gorgeous. Every song is a hit and recognizable, and there's such humanity in the story.
I know. It's, what moves you the most when you're song when you're singing or
I'm
hearing
it? Oh, gosh. One of my favorite songs in the show is Empty Chairs at Empty Tables. And I'm always kind of off stage waiting to enter when that song is happening. And I'll just watch Peter from the wings. And it always makes me emotional to see all of the guys from the barricade, you know, with their candles up in the air. But the end of the show is also so emotional to be like center down stage in an embrace with Marius and, you know, Jean Valjean. I can't give this away, but, the whole company is on stage at the end, and it is just a wall of sound. And you all you hear is, do you hear the people sing? And I'm just looking out. There's nothing in front of me, but like the audience in vast blackness and spotlights. And I always, in that moment, I'm like, oh my God, am I dreaming right now? You know?
Alexa Lopez making her national tour debut, and Les Mis is here in Milwaukee. It actually runs through November 2nd, so you need to get your tickets to get out of there. You've been on Broadway. What's it like to be at the top of your profession and be on Broadway?
You know, I can't believe that I can say that I've been on Broadway. It's indescribable. I'm so blessed, and my career has been a dream come true in so many ways so far. And getting to perform with legends like Bernadette Peters and Lea Salonga. If you would have told me that my Broadway debut was doing all of Sondheim's best music with Bernadette Peters and Lea Salonga, I would have said, get out of here. You're lying.
I love hearing behind the scenes stuff whenever I'm watching, I'm like, Book of Mormon or anything. I'm like, how are they getting along and everything? But was there any behind the scenes snafu where you were like, but no one noticed that happened?
Like in Old Friends on Broadway or like in Les Mis?
Whenever you were performing, did something go wrong in your...
Of course. Stuff goes wrong every night. That's the beauty of live theater. You're never going to see... There are never going to be two identical performances. I'm trying to think. There's so many... We call it the white room as actors. And sometimes when you're on stage, your brain kind of just leaves Earth for a second and you don't know where you are.
You're in the white room.
You forget your lyrics or you just like glitch. And that's happened in every show that I've done. It's happened to me. It's so normal, but... Yeah, and we break character and it happens.
The way for the set to move, and it looks like three-story tall buildings.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
How are you doing that? Is it all on rollers and it just switches?
Yeah, we have a brilliant tech crew backstage helping us with everything, but some of the big pieces that you see are on tracks that are like ingrained into our deck that we bring with us to every city. And so they're literally automated. So we can press a button. Whoever's calling the show will call the queue. And then the towers will move on at a certain point in the music. And it's just like little divots in the floor.
Wow.
Yeah.
How much free time will you get? Will you be able to check out some of our restaurants? Will you be able to walk on the lake?
Oh, yeah, we got some cheese curds yesterday.
Oh, good.
Thankfully, we have some of our days free here, and we just have to perform at night. So I'm looking forward to exploring Milwaukee.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing your world with us. Yes, Les Miserables, the Marcus Performing Arts Center. It's going on. There's one tonight, and it runs through November 2nd.
Yes.
Please
you can
enjoy.
Check out tickets at marcuscenter.org. Mm-hmm. Marcuscenter.org. You can get tickets. What a treat for us. Enjoy our city.
Thank you.
Alexa Lopez. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It is 343 at WTMJ. A big company in Milwaukee, one of the biggest, having maybe their worst day ever on Wall Street. What does it mean? That's up next on WTMJ. Boy, Fiserv, the big financial services company near us right here, is having a really, really rough day. I bet they're glad that the market is closed. I mean, that's how bad it was. It was not good today. They closed down today. The stock did 56 points off 44%.
Oh,
not that long
gosh.
Ago, it was trading at 238, and now it's at 71. Chief economist at Annex Wealth Management, Brian Jacobson, is with us. Brian, good afternoon. I want to start with that topic. I mean, this is not just a bad day. This is borderline catastrophic. What do we know about why this happened? What's going on?
Yeah, it was really interesting to see that. It was the biggest drop in their history as a percentage. And it really, I think, began back in February as far as the decline in the stock price. You know, there's just been a few issues here and there in terms of growth outlook, competitive positioning, right? They're considered a fintech company. And so who are some of the competitors? And really, it was, I think, just the announcement about the disappointing earnings for the year. I mean, they still made money, right? It's just that it was, you know, only off by about, I think, 20% compared to what the estimate was going in. So missing those expectations. And then giving the guidance. So oftentimes the executives, they're going to talk about, well, what do you expect for the rest of the year and maybe for the path going forward? And that's where I think a lot of the disappointment was, is just a lot of uncertainty. Then you combine that with a massive shakeup of the top leadership. I think it just really caught a lot of people kind of in shock that, number one, you had the miss on the earnings, the guide lower for what to expect next. And then it raises the question about, well, is there anything else lurking there given the big shakeup at the top?
My goodness. Okay, so I looked this up for the naming rights of Fiserv Forum.
Yes, yes.
It cost $150 million.
Oof.
And they're paying roughly $6 million a year. Okay, so Brian, I'm not a numbers girl. I know you are a numbers guy. Do you think that they're going to keep those naming rights on there?
Well, I think that there's a contract there, so they have that to deal with. And keep in mind, they are still profitable. I mean, for the third quarter, just as an example, they made $764 million, right? So, I don't think that there's really a huge issue there. It's just that when we look at the price of the stock, that is forward-looking, thinking about, okay, where are you now in terms of how much you're making, and then what do we expect in the future? And it's not as though the market is saying that they're not going to make money. It's just not nearly as much as what was originally thought, you know, before the release.
So there's something called Clover. Are you familiar with that they have?
I've seen a few of those machines.
They said
in
really
fact, I know a small business owner who used one. Yeah.
Yeah, they said that was one of the biggest things, that it really underperformed. It provides businesses with point-of-sale hardware.
Yep, and I think that's the big thing, right? Are they going to compete with the Toast? You have, I think, PayPal that's in that, or Block is another company. So being a financial services firm, positioning themselves as a fintech company, maybe it's, in terms of the competitive landscape, it's just changed enough, then that technology, it just didn't get the traction, or maybe it's losing a little traction compared to what people were thinking.
Annex Chief Economist Brian Jacobson's with us. So, Brian, if somebody has $1,000 extra and they're looking to put it in the market tomorrow, Would Fiserv be a good investment, or is now not the time to put the money with Fiserv?
I'm never a big fan of just picking one particular stock and hoping for the best, right? I believe firmly in diversification and patience. And after, you know, you see a big move in any stock, so whether it's Pfizer or if, it, you know, we just saw some results come out for Meta, also known as Facebook, right? Those, that stock is down. Sometimes when we see that, if you like the fundamentals, so if you've done the work, you like the fundamentals, you think the valuation, it's become more fair if the price goes down. But you always have to ask yourself, you know, if the market moves against what your expectation was, has the market sniffed out something that maybe you haven't really assessed in your fundamental analysis? So I'd say you really need to dig in and make sure that you've done the fundamental work first.
Brian Jacobson's with us. So the Fed today with the second straight rate cut, a quarter point. I found this interesting, Brian. Two dissents. One said that there should have been a deeper cut. The other said the other direction. They should have held steady. That hasn't happened, those kind of dissents, since 2019. Evaluate what happened today and what Jerome Powell had to say.
Well, Jerome Powell did his best to basically shrug his shoulders throughout the press conference, because they are kind of flying blind in terms of the data. They do have private sector data sources they can look at. You know, ADP, they just released a weekly number. It was showing some jobs gains, but nothing that was shooting the lights out. Inflation numbers have been a little bit better than feared, so still high above their target. And that's where the dissent comes in. So Stephen Miron, who is on the Federal Reserve Board, he was appointed by President Trump. He was saying, let's cut 50 basis points instead of 25. But then President Jeff Schmidt at the Kansas City Fed, he would have preferred to just take another pause, right? Kind of, we already cut once. Let's see how things shake out. So a little bit difference of opinion there, but the bulk of the members, I think, did fall into line and think, yes, we monetary policy is still restrictive. We can cut rates. The big wild card, though, is what happens in December. And that's what the market reacted to. The market was up on the announcement, but during the press conference, Chair Powell, when he said that a rate cut in December is not a foregone conclusion, that's where you saw stocks sell off a little bit. And that's also where Treasury yields began to rise.
You know, we just had the Marquette Law School poll come out, and we had the head of that, Brian, and we were talking about the government shutdown, and it was almost split with who thinks it's good, who thinks it's bad. I think you can tell which party thinks it's good or bad, or they don't care, or they do care. What is the real deal here? Let's say that the shutdown keeps on going for another month. What could happen to the stocks and to businesses?
Well, it does affect the individuals, right? They're not getting their paychecks. It also affects contractors. If you think about the more than 100,000 small businesses and large businesses that are contractors of the government, they're not getting paid. So it has a bigger effect there, and it does tend to snowball with time. Think about regulatory approvals for stock listings. If you have a project that you're doing and you need government approval for it, you might not get it. So the longer it lasts, the bigger the costs, and the longer it takes to recover.
Annex Wealth Management Chief Economist Brian Jacobson. Always really good perspective, Brian. Thank you so much. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, you got it, always. All right, we will recap the numbers as we head through the rest of the afternoon, but on the Fiserv front, to recap that for you, stock closed at $70.60. That was down 44% on the day. Wow, that's really big. A drop of $56 in the stock price during the day.